I want you to grasp an image in your head through this whole thing and through this whole series. I want us to capture this image. I leave the jail in Claremore the other day, and I'm still really not even knowing what I'm going to be teaching on this Sunday morning, thinking, okay, we've got a couple of things going on, and I can come up with something topical. But if you've been here for any length of time, I'm not a topical sermon guy. I just don't pick a subject one day and a subject the next week. I don't study that way. I study in series, and because of that, that's how I teach, how I was trained in that. And I pull out of the jail the other day, and here's this wall where there used to be some windows, and now there aren't any windows at all. And it began to cause me to think, because see, from the outside, when you look at that wall, it looks like there's this big defense to keep things out or to keep things in. But what's it like on the inside, on the other side of that wall, in that room where those windows have been blocked up? I mean, it's got to be cold. It's got to be dark. It's got to be kind of damp. It's got to be musty. There's no fresh breeze. There's no fresh air. There's just this stifling life that may be taking place on the other side. And it caused me, while I'm sitting there at a stoplight looking at this, all these things are starting to roll up in me. And already Father's beginning to speak where we're going, what we're going to do. Cold, hard, and musty. So this is my question. And this is the question that I drove away from there that day. Is simply this. What if God made windows to our soul? Windows to our soul where we go and meet Him and where He comes to meet us. And we systematically begin to brick those windows up without even realizing it. And there may be valid reasons why we brick those windows up. It could be defense to keep things out or to keep things in. We may be gotten just a little too busy with life. I have some people that came to me and they said, well, you know, we kind of fell away from God because life got in the way. And I went, survey says no. Because Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. Life didn't get in the way. Stuff got in the way. If life got in the way, you would be walking with Him. So sometimes we get so busy that all of a sudden this window that God wants to come and speak to us and we speak to Him, we begin to take a brick and a little mortar and stick it in its place. We may have gotten angry. Angry at somebody else. Angry at God. We may have been hurt. Sidetrack. You know, I was sharing with someone the other day of when I first came to church here. There was this lady here that she like fought me tooth and nail on everything. And she wanted to get up and she wanted to make some comments about tithes and offerings. And I was dealing with that subject that day, and I said, you know, well, maybe next week. And during that week, I found out what her personal agenda was. One of the guys on the board had not been tithing, and she wanted to get up and rip him from the pulpit for not tithing. And I'm like, dude, I'm glad I didn't let her get up there. And I told her I couldn't ever have it. And it was in the old church before we had the fire, and we were standing out in the front. And she stood there, and she stood there, and she says, I don't know if I can ever come back here because I've been so hurt. And I said, well, okay, I'm sorry. I was a little more gracious than that. But as everybody left that day, I got in my car, and I was pulling out this road. And when I got to the road and I started turning, God spoke to me immediately and said, she doesn't know the difference between being hurt and being stretched. And it's one of those epiphany moments that I'm sitting there going, dude, how many people are really hurt in church where we think it's like thousands And maybe it's only a small percentage of people who really get hurt. People get hurt in church. I'm not denying that. But how many times are people, God is trying to stretch them in their relationship, trying to deal with them with certain things, and it has become so easy to go, oh, I'm hurt, and not deal with the issue, and the mortar comes out, and another brick goes into place, and God, you didn't take care of this, and another brick goes into place, and God, you didn't take care of that, and you don't care, and before you know it, there's this wall that is up, and God cannot permeate through that wall. We have put our defenses up so much that we no longer feel His fresh breath. His breeze. We no longer feel His heartbeat. We no longer, and we think we're doing just fine, and yet our life has become cold and dark and musty with no fresh air, no movement, and we can't see where we're going. Series is going to ask us some questions. What would it look like if we took a chisel and we begin to break some of that mortar away and begin to take some of those bricks out of that window so the breath of God can begin to flow once again into our life? If I ask you, when was one of the greatest times that God spoke to you? Probably everyone, if you're jogged in the memory, you'd be able to say, it was this or it was this, where all of a sudden you felt Him flow. And where is that all gone? What it would it be like if God put windows in our soul to talk to us, for Him to come meet with us, us to meet with Him, and we've systematically bricked it up? And what if He's saying, I want you just to lift it up. I want you to crack the window once again. That's what our series is going to be about this time. So this morning, we're going to start out with a simple thing on prayer. Now, I'm going to teach on prayer today. And you know what? We could teach on prayer like every week for the next 4,000 Sundays and never touch it. But I'm not going to do a in-depth study of prayer. I'm not going to do an encyclopedia type thing of breaking down what prayer is, how you pray. I'm just going to throw out some thoughts today that might help us in that avenue of let's be honest. I'm going to be honest as the pastor. Very few people who are in Christendom really pray. And even fewer read their Bible. And I want to have an open discussion about. My whole desire is to get you to just lift the window a little bit today. There's this prayer that comes up in Matthew that I want us to read this together all out loud. And this is out of the NIV. So as I started, I want us to all pray this prayer today out loud. It says, Our Father. Okay, now when I say I want you to read it out loud with us, that means participation. Okay? That means I'm not doing, you tried to trip me again. I mean, I swear. That means we all participate together. Are you ready? One, two, three. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be Your name. Your kingdom come, Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread. Forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. For Yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory. Amen. Wow. What an incredible prayer. Same prayer shows up over in Luke. Except when it shows up in Luke, the neat thing about that is His disciples, Jesus' disciples, are coming to Him, and they're coming to Jesus, and they're saying, Jesus, teach us how to pray. John, he taught his disciples how to pray. How come you don't teach us? Because they have caught Jesus praying a lot, praying all the time. And Jesus goes, okay, yeah, sure. Pray this way. And he prays this prayer. Now, this prayer is what we've called an index prayer. If you're familiar with Judaism, if you're familiar with how they learned and how they memorized the Word of God, hid it away in their heart, and they learned it in index, like we do index cards. 1, A, B, C, 2, A, B, C, 1, 2, 3. Same thing. This is an index prayer. What he does is he teaches them, and he breaks this prayer down today. And so what I want to do is break it kind of down for us. And the crazy thing, it only takes like a minute to read. You know, it just takes a minute to sit there and read this prayer. And this is how Jesus prayed. He says this, "Hallowed be your name." In other words, there's something important about God's name. In other words, his name is to be what? Honored. So many times we hear his name in this world, and it's not being honored. It's being used as a curse word. As a, you know, one of the things you hear people, that something happens, they go, "Oh my God." You know what? That's blasphemy. We need to watch how we speak to honor his name. Remember 2 weeks ago we talked about when the seven sons of Sceva went when they just pulled out of their toolbox, "Name of Jesus, it works for this guy, we'll throw it out there," and they're eaten alive by demons almost. And then the reverence that came on the church, realizing it's not a name that you just carry in your toolbox, that you just throw down to get things to happen. There's life in that name. There's death in that name. There's liberty in that name. There's captivity in that name. As we look like, because I want to be captivated by his name. So there's something about the name being honored. So in other words, when I go to work today, God, I want your reputation to be more important than me just getting ahead. In other words, I want to honor you throughout the day. I want to honor you in a way than just getting even with somebody else. I want to honor you in a way where I'm just not getting noticed. Anyone like that? Or know people? We know people like that. They want to be noticed. I know nobody's here's like that, okay? But we know people that are like that. And they're usually sitting right next to you. No, anyway, here we go. Let me today honor your name. That's first and foremost of what I want to do. God, give me your daily bread. Listen, in other words, God, supply my needs for today. And all of us here have different needs today. Some of them might be financial needs. Anyone have any financial needs? Okay, and the rest of you are lying. Okay. No, we all have financial needs. We're in a world that's costing more and more and more and more to live. I grew up in a family where only my dad worked on a military paycheck. It wasn't that much, and we survived. And now it takes 2 to 3 people in the family to make things break even. Not only that it's getting more expensive, it becomes tied with a spiritual kind of thing of robbing us. God, help me with my needs. Help me with the stunts my kids might pull today. I don't know what's in store for me. I don't know if I'm coming home and the garage is painted red. I don't know if I'm going to get a call. I don't know. Help me with my daily needs. Give me freedom to enjoy the blessings that are around me. We're going to dip into that in just a moment. God, supply what I need today. You know what I'm facing. I don't know what I'm facing, but you know what's out there. God, I want to honor your name today in that workplace, on that highway, in that place. If I have a bumper-to-bumper thing today, God, don't let me cuss them. Let me honor your name. Be a representative of the kingdom, that your kingdom will come, reside in me, that I live out that kingdom. I don't know what the need will be, but will you be there? And the debts I owe, God, I thank you that you have forgiven me. Because see, I've taken care of my forgiveness issues with someone else. Where they had aught with me, I went to them. Or I had aught with them, I went to them. I took care of those things. And as I took care of those things, I know your forgiveness flows from me. But Lord, if there's something in me that I don't recognize, I don't see. I'm a stumbling block in somebody's life. I've caused offense in somebody's life. I don't know about. Then reveal, search my heart, oh God, that I can go to them or they can come to me and that can be taken care of so that I can be forgiven by you. Father, I want to honor your name today. God, I have needs and I'm asking you to take care of those needs. I'm walking in forgiveness, and where I don't have it, show me so that I can walk in forgiveness and deliver me. Deliver me from the evil one. Deliver me from the evil one. Deliver me from my superior attitude that I am the cock of the walk at the office. I am the man and everyone must come and bow to me. Deliver me from that. Or deliver to me from my inferior attitude that I know I have something to say, but I don't feel that I'm good enough to say those things. Anyone ever been there? Believe it or not, I used to be an extremely shy person. It's true. Swear to Buddha. But I used to be that way. Very, very introverted. Because there were things that because of being in the military and moving all the time, a brand new school every year, falling behind, being back behind 2 years in school, there becomes this thing that I can't do this. And it wasn't until later in life that I started going to summer school and taking other things that I almost caught up with my grade. And those things of not being able to spell, put things together, and I still work on my vocabulary because I want it to be expansive because of what was stolen from me in my earlier days. God, deliver me from that inferiority that has bound me, that I know I have something vital and important to say, but deliver me from that. Deliver me from spending money that I do not have on things I do not need to impress people I don't even like. We have this syndrome of shopaholicism. Like, when things go bad, let's go buy a boat. Let's go buy this. Let's go buy that. Trying to impress, keep up with everybody. And deliver me from that. And there's probably other needs that as I'm talking, you're going, ooh, I know that one. I have that one. That's where you say, God, let me honor your name today. God, not only honor your name, but I need some daily bread. I don't know what's facing me. You do. God, I'm walking in complete forgiveness as far as I'm concerned and know. And Lord, deliver me from the evil one, for you are the great and mighty God who sits on the throne. And I've learned one thing in life, there is a God and I am not him. If we could learn to do this just a couple of moments in the morning, I'm going to tell you, it will revolutionize your life. So I got this question that keeps rumbling around is this. If God has created windows to our soul, and you and prayer is so simple, we can read it in a minute, then why is prayer so hard? Dude, let's follow Harvey today. You're standing in the front yard of Harvey's garage. The garage comes up and you see Harvey. Harvey's gotten up. Harvey's taking a shower and he's coming out to his car real quick. He probably took a bagel. He threw it in the toaster, smeared some peanut butter, ate it real quick. He's got his coffee in a travel mug. He's got his keys. He's starting out. He's backing out of the driveway. And if you could get in the car with Harvey and say, Harvey, did you pray today? What about the window of opportunity here? He would probably go, no, I didn't pray today. I'm in a hurry. Can't you see? Oh, well, Harvey, did you pray yesterday? No. What about the day before? Oh, man, I know I should. I know I should pray, but can I be honest with you? Yeah. Prayer's just boring. Yeah, I'm sitting there talking to him, no talk back. Anyone feel that way? I'm going to tell you, there's still times I get into that deal. So now we come down with the list of excuses. Harvey, be honest with me. See if we track with any of these. Be honest with me. I don't have time. Life is going too fast. I can't stay focused. I try to get down and sit down to pray, and then if I'm in front of the computer, I click on something because I don't want to forget it. I forgot something over here. I can't stay focused. So what's the use of even trying when it doesn't even happen? I can't stay focused. I read about those guys that can pray for 3 hours. I'm good for 3 minutes on a real good day. When everything's right, when all the lights are green, there's no stop signs, on a real good day, no cops in the street, and I can fly. On a day like that, I might can do 3 minutes. When I do it, I normally do it because I feel guilty. I'm afraid that if I don't do it, he's going to get mad. Mainly, I'm not in the habit. See, I'm in the habit of not praying. I'm in the habit of running out the door with my coffee mug and my keys. I have never really got in the habit to pray to begin with. But if you dig deeper, and if we are honest with the conversation of prayer, you might hear some things you don't want to hear. And that's the problem with most of us. It's the problem with pastors and associate pastors. It's the problem with leadership. It's the problem with the congregation. We've never learned the art of listening. Because most of the time, we don't want to really hear what's going on. I encourage you, not only in your relationships with brothers, sisters, mothers, dads, husbands, and wife, communication is the most important thing you can do. And there's times you don't want to hear things. And I'm as guilty as anyone here, especially when it comes to with my wife. There's times I just don't want to hear it, and I know there's times she definitely don't want to hear me, and I can't understand that. Dude. It's the question about unanswered prayer. Listen, I prayed and I prayed and I prayed and I prayed, and nothing happened. So I'm not even sure that prayer is really real. Matter of fact, it's come to the point I'm not even sure really God is there. And if he is, I'm not sure he even cares or listens. Listen, we're having an honest conversation. Because you might be sitting here going, I have never experienced that ever in my life. But I'm going to tell you what everyone else around you has. I'm not totally convinced that prayer works. And then there's the deal about answered prayer. What do you mean by that? I prayed for my little girl. She was sick, had a fever. 3 days later, she's well. Would she have gotten well without praying? Could the body have taken care of that anyway? Does prayer really matter? Or we were going to sell the used car. We prayed that the car would sell. It sold. But used cars always sell. Is it coincidence or did God answer the prayer? Would she have gotten better? Would the car have sold? Whatever prayer would have happened, anyway. So you have this person. Does he answer? Does he doesn't? Answered prayer, unanswered prayer. Is it really real? So this morning I just want to have an honest discussion, okay? Just an honest discussion about this, of where we are and where I want us to be at the end of the service. I'm not going to do an exhaustive study. You know, the thing is, if you're a Harvey, all I want you to do is the budge that window a little bit. Or at least take a chisel and knock a little hole so a little bit, just so the conversation begins. If you're here and you pray 3 hours a day, cool. But most of us, I'm going to be real honest, there's very little praying going on. Why? We'll just throw this one out. Our land's in a mess. Look at where our country is financially, politically. Look where the health care is. Look where the immigration is. Look where and I'm not making this a political thing. I'm just saying our country's in a mess. But if we had churches full of praying people, I think that scripture in Isaiah said that if we are called by his name and we humble ourselves and seek his face and pray and turn from our wicked ways, that he would what? Our land's not being healed right now. So I would suggest and implore you to lift the window just a little bit to let the fresh breath of God flow through, to unlock the window and just lift it up a couple of inches. I grew up in a house that when you lifted the window up, we had holes drilled in it where you took a nail and stuck it in there to hold it. You know what I'm talking about? That's because the rollers broke and it didn't hold up like it's supposed to. And to lift it up and put a nail and maybe next week lift it a little farther and put it in the next slot. That's my job here. That's what I want to do. Four concepts I want to explore. The first concept is this. What if God is interesting? What do you mean? How long can you sustain a conversation with someone who is boring you to tears? You're sitting down trying to have a conversation, a dinner with someone, and they are boring. How long are you going to sit there? You're going to look for the first excuse to get up. But what if God is interesting? You're invited. See, I wonder if God likes being, himself. You're invited to a cookout. You don't know anybody there, but when you get there, you grab you a 7-Up and you open that thing and you're beginning to look around and that's good. You look around for someone and you see a family of 5 over here. And you can tell the 3 kids really don't belong to mom and dad. You think adoption, foster care, you think something. So you meander over there and you begin to talk to them. And as conversation goes, you find out that these 3, how'd you come with these kids? Well, we were in a foster care program. And these 3 kids became available. And these 3 kids, they were in an abusive home. And they were pulled from that environment. We had the opportunity to adopt all 3 on the same day. And you're sitting there going, all 3 on the same day from an abusive home, no kids, now 3 kids. How's that working out for you? Well, some days it's heaven on earth. Some days it's hell on earth. Some day I want to pull my hair out. Some days I just laugh with joy. What happened is you're engaging in a very interesting conversation. A few minutes later, you meet this lady. And what do you do? Well, I'm a school teacher. Well, not anymore. I used to be a school teacher. I'm a principal now. Oh, in our city? No, I'm at inner city Chicago. Dude, what is that like? What was it like moving from the classroom to be a principal? Well, sometimes I like it, sometimes I don't like it. I like it, because I'm not combative with certain kids and certain things that are going on. However, I do not like the paperwork, but I really like the teaching. I didn't like all the paperwork and the grading papers at night, but when I would teach something and I'd watch that little girl all of a sudden just go, light up because this knowledge came into her. I love my job except when I didn't like it. I mean, instantly we're drawn to an interesting conversation. A car pulls up. Young guy gets out, 22, 23 years old. He gets out. All the guys and all the girls run to him and they're embracing him. They're hugging him. There's tears. They're crying. And someone next to you says, He just got back from his third tour in Afghanistan. And you don't enter into that conversation because you're watching bonding and rebonding take place. But if you could, what kind of questions would you ask? I mean, what was it like being away? What was it like coming back stateside? What was it like? Did you lose any friends? Interesting conversation. So my question, what if God is interesting? And I submit to you that we're drawn to interesting people. We are not drawn to boring people. If your view of God is that He is distant and He is dull and He is boring, it will determine the amount of time you spend with Him and being engaged with Him. If you view Him as a dark curmudgeon who has a club that is willing and ready to beat you over the head because you haven't spent time with Him, then you don't go there. If you view Him as just the spirit of love and joy and peace, put a flower in your hair, everything's going to be all right, that gets pretty boring pretty quick too. I want to engage with someone like, does God like being God? Life like God, I think it'd be interesting. I think God enjoys being God. I think He's perfectly content at who He is. I think He is interesting. But Don, talking out at a cookout is way different than sitting there with and talking to God, because He just doesn't seem to talk back. But what if He does speak? Concept number one, is He interesting? Concept number two, does He speak? Listen what Psalms David said about 1,000 years ago. He said this, he goes, "The heavens declare the glory of God, the skies proclaim the work of His hands. Day after day pours forth speech, night after night they display God's knowledge before us." The time I was in Montana, on an empty road and not much highway, it was no moon that night. The stars were out. I'm driving back from Idaho in a car that I purchased up there. I pull down this road. I drive about 20 miles down this road. I turn the headlights off. I crawl on the top of the car. I lay across the windshield and I watch the Milky Way like I had not seen it before. And it was speaking with knowledge and display of who He is. There is no speech or language where their voice is not heard. Their voice goes out from all the earth, their words to the end of the world. 1,000 years ago, He writes this and He says, "I have been speaking through creation to you every day." I do not believe that God created this world because He was bored, that He didn't have anything else to do. I don't believe that He created us to speak about His love to us. I believe creation happened because He is a creative God and He wants to be known. He wants to be intimate with us. He wants to share His passions, His life, His fullness, who He is. He wants to sit down with us and say, "Be part of me." He speaks to us. I got a couple of pictures. Kind of dim the lights real quick. And let's just look at creation. This incredible road with the trees changing colors. Purple majesty, a field in British Columbia. A rainbow in the middle of a desert. A sunset over an island. I love this one. Look at that cloud, like a mushroom over Mount Fuji in Japan. Is that incredible? How did that happen, that cloud is like a hat that just comes over that? Oh man, I used to go to Dinky Creek up in the Sierra Nevadas and backpack. And to take your shoes off after a hot day of backpacking and put your feet in the stream and smell the ponderosa pines. Anyone know what a ponderosa pine smells like? like vanilla extract, and you're in the middle of the forest, and you smell not only the water, not only the air and everything around you, but vanilla extract in the, and I love vanilla. Tahiti's always beautiful, isn't it? But to lay in a field and to view the Alps in Switzerland, my goodness, God has created this beautiful world with His fingerprints and thumbprints all over it. The first time I step off the plane in Hawaii, I mean the smell of hibiscus after you got past the jet fuel, the hibiscus, just like, you're just like, I'm enraptured. I get to the North Shore for the first time, and I mean not only the hibiscus, but the smell of clean salt air coming through the sugar cane that's about to be harvested, and you could smell the sweetness in the air. And of course, being a surfer and seeing the waves, you're going like, God is good. But I mean, it was everything else about the experience. Thursday morning, I had my coffee cup, and I walked outside for a moment. And you know, it's been raining a lot, and your yard's probably like mine, a little overgrown because we can't mow this week, but it's green as can be. And I watched this red-winged blackbird fly into the middle of my yard. And I watched that thing hop around like he was praying, God, I need your bread. And he grabs a worm. And I'm sitting there watching that going, God, you've already started the conversation this morning, and I haven't even opened my mouth. What an incredible God you are. What if he cares? What if he's strong? I mean, what if he's interesting? What if he speaks to us? What if he cares about us? When his disciples come and ask him to teach him, he starts with our Father. Now, when we do that, it in a congregation any size, it usually conjures up feelings that aren't really pure. Very few people really have good relationships with their dad. I'm one of the fortunate ones that did. But some people can come back and say, my dad was disconnected. He was into his own stuff. He was never there for me. If I came to him and tried to talk to him, he was so disconnected, he didn't listen to me. He never spoke one good word over me. It was always a command. It was always an order. And it was always barked. My dad bailed on me. I thought we were doing good, and he left me and Mom. He molested me. Oh, my heart cries for girls that were molested by their father because they struggle with the whole thing of never being able to have a true understanding of father. I had a dad, but I was more of an orphan than a son or a daughter. When you come to this whole thing of saying our Father, it can conjure up all kinds of stuff that are inside of us, of the hurts and the pains. Girls, guys, when it comes to that, begin to, especially girls, begin to view God as the Father you always wanted. And guys, begin to look at God as the Father that you really want to be. If we're struggling in through those things. But he starts with our Father, and one of the driving points in the Old Testament is the care for the orphans, the widows, and the foreigners. We see it when we did our series on hospitality last year. We saw there's this driving force in the culture of always taking care of the widows, the orphans, and the foreigners. That when you went and harvest your field, don't harvest from the corners of the field. Leave that for the widows, the orphans, and for the foreigners. When you pass by and you cut grapes, do not make a second pass. Leave those for the widows, the orphans, and the foreigners. If you drop it to the ground, do not pick it up. Leave that for the widows, the orphans, and the foreigners. Jesus deals with that when he's walking and talking some things. So this driving force of this thing, what is that really all about? It's about two different things, I think, we got here. What if he cares not only for their care, your care, but redeems us from the world of slavery? There's something about the heart of God that loves the broken, the oppressed. He loves the people that nobody else wants to deal with. And see, that's my prayer. Send us everyone nobody else wants to deal with. Because we will. Because there's something about the heart of that. Today, we have orphanages. We have foster care. In those days, in Jesus' day, they didn't have those things. If a mom or a dad had a child that was unwanted, a child that was unruly, a child that was a problem, a child that had some kind of physical deformity to them, what they did with these children is took them outside the gate of the city and they left them. They were unwanted. And every caravan that would come into town, these kids would throng that caravan, hoping for a piece of bread, hoping for something to drink, hoping for some kind of coinage that they could participate in life. If you were with us when we went to Israel and we stopped at that one place where that Bedouin tribe was that had nothing, that was living in cardboard boxes, if you remember how those children came out of the rocks, out of these things, and just came and latching, and what little things you had, they begin to fight over. This is at the gate of all the cities. Now picture what is really being said by Paul when he says God has adopted us. He has taken us from outside the gates of the city and he has brought us into the city. Not only in the city, he has made us a part of his family, a part of his household. In our society, when things go bad and we don't have we can't pay our bills, we've lost our job, this happened, that happened, or we get so overextended we can't catch up, we have this thing called bankruptcy. They didn't have bankruptcy then. They had what was known as debtor's prison, or you were sold into slavery, became an indentured servant, and you had to take care and work it off. And you're out in the field. You've lost your home. You don't know where your wife and kids are because they came and they arrested you. They put you on a block, and a guy back there bid for you, and he bought you. And you're in his field that day. And you got a knife, and you're cutting grapes. And you've got blisters on your hands. You got blisters on your feet. You were sweating. And another servant comes and he says, you're wanted in the big house. And that's never a good sign. So reluctantly you walk in. And when you walk in, you see your brother-in-law standing there before a master going 10, 20, 30, 40. And then the master says, you're free to go. And you walk out the door. And you're going, where are we going? Your brother-in-law going, we're going home. That's what it means to be redeemed. That God bought us out of the field and paid for you and I so we could go home and be adopted and not live outside the gates of the city, but to bring us into the city. to not only have our citizenship with Him, but to be part of the family and be part of the household whereby I can call Him Father? What if He cares enough not only to redeem you, but to buy you out of the world of slavery? What if He's interesting? What if He's speaking? What if He cares? And what if He's strong? What if He's strong enough to take it on the chin when you're mad? What if He's strong enough to take our laments? Here's a quick listen. There's a difference between lamenting and complaining. Listen, complaining is nothing more than complaining. And it becomes caustic. It becomes bitter. It just, until you get to the point you don't want to take the phone call. You won't want to talk to this poor person. You don't want to have anything because it's just constant. That's not what lamenting is. See, complaining is complaining with no hope whatsoever. Lamenting is being honest with the circumstances where you are with hope. With hope. David's lament. There's three things. There's going to be a little exercise for all you guys, maybe, if you're willing to go here. It's going to be in 22. It's going to be in 55. They're in your bulletin. And there's going to be in 69. But here is David's lament. But yet, coupled with his hope, I want you to be honest with God. And as we read these up here on the board, I wonder if any of these shoes fit anywhere we are. My God, why have you forsaken me? You are so far from saving me, so far from my words of groaning. I'm just torn up inside, and you're not around. Where have you gone? Oh, my God, I cry out day by day, but you don't answer. By night, I'm not silent. I cry, and I cry, and I cry, and you're never there. Anyone feel like that ever? But then he goes on to say this. Yet you are enthroned as the Holy One. You are the praise of Israel, deliverer of my life, deliver my life from the sword, my precious life from the power of the dogs. Rescue me from the mouth of lions, save me from the horns of the wild one. I will declare your name to my brothers in the congregation. I will praise you. See the difference? That he's honest and he comes right out with that thing. Where he is, but yet he comes with hope. Still, let's look at the next one. 55. My thoughts trouble me. I am distraught at the voice of my enemy who stares at the stares of the wicked, for they bring down suffering upon me and revile me in their anger. Ever had anyone angry at you? Stare at you? My heart is in anguish within me. The terrors of death assail me. Fear and trembling have beset me. Horror has overwhelmed me. But listen to what he says later. Now, this is verse 17 through 19. I put Selah. If you don't know what that means as you're reading to the Psalms and it says Selah, that means to stop and contemplate. In other words, as they would sing this song over, they would repeat this phrase more than one time, and they would stop, and they would contemplate. They would contemplate this, evening and morning. Noon, I cry out in distress, and he hears my voice. He ransoms me unharmed from the battle. Waged against me, even though many oppress me, God who is enthroned forever will hear. Ooh. Save me, O God. This is the one I really can tie with. Save me, O God, from the waters that have come up to my neck. I am tiptoeing and I can barely keep. I have to hold my nose up to be able to breathe. Where there is no foothold, I have come into the deep waters. The floods engulf me. I am worn out from calling for help. My throat is parched. My eyes fail, looking for my God. Those who hate me without reason outnumber their hair. It goes on to say, don't let me sink down in the mire and the mud to where I can't get out. It says, don't let me get sucked in to the quicksand of life. He goes on and on and on in this one, over and over. And it says that if we will change our complaining into lament and do it right, it could absolutely have a change in our life. Why? This. Is God scared that you feel the way you do? Not at all. I think He's strong enough to take on your worst feelings. No, He's pleased. Why? Because if you're lamenting, you have lifted the wind up just a little bit, and the conversation has begun. He's excited about it. Find yourself in the Scriptures. This is what I tell you. And if you don't know how to be poetic, you don't know how to write those things, I take Psalms 22, 55, 69, or I find another one. I might drive out to Lake Ulaga. I might go down to the park when no one's there. I might take my Bible and I might sit down. And I may not be able to pray these things. I lose focus. And I might just make this lament my prayer. God, this is where I am. This is how I... This is what is coming against me. Deliver me. For You are my God. You saved me once, You can save me again. You lifted me out of a situation I never thought I could get out, and my life has changed. My relationship with my daughter was broken, but God, it hurts, but You are the one who restores that which is lost. Find yourself in the Scriptures. Use these words if you can't use your own. Because at the end of this one, this is what He says. He says, answer me, O Lord, out of the goodness of Your love, out of Your great mercy that is turned to me. What if He's strong? It's easy to me to respond to a person who is interesting, who speaks back, who cares, and who's strong. Mickey, so 15 minutes, Harvey's up 15 minutes earlier in the morning. You're out in the front yard and you don't see Harvey running with his car keys. Because Harvey now has his coffee in a ceramic mug rather than a travel mug. And Harvey's standing in the backyard. And he's watching a red-winged blackbird fly in. And he says, God, You already started the conversation this morning before I even opened my mouth. Lord, let me make Your name great today. Let me be worried about Your reputation over mine. Let my life be an offering to You this morning, today, that it be lifted up, and that maybe somebody be drawn to You. I don't know what my needs are today, but You do, Father. I don't know what kind of... There's people I love to work with, and there's people I don't love to work with. And I don't know what's going to come up. But supply my needs. I don't know what my kids are going to do today when I come home. We are late on these bills. I need Your help. Come and rescue me. I have forgiven everyone I know. If there's something I need to do, help me do that. Deliver me not only from the evil one, but God, deliver me from myself today. because I can be my own worst enemy. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever and ever. And what you have done is you cracked the window. And for the first time, the fresh breath and breeze of God can be again flow into our life. So to encourage you as we stand this morning, to encourage you this morning, I simply say, take a risk, because I guarantee that God is interesting. He is already speaking. He cares for you. And our God is a strong God. May God bless you. May He keep you. May His countenance shine upon you. May you, in the fullness of God today, begin to break the mortar, the bricks away. May you crack the window, and may God's breath flow into your life. Amen.